welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, drama. Later on, the suspense series brings us a strange story from 1956. But right now, an episode of On Stage with radio couple at the time, Kathy and Elliot Lewis, appearing in the story Statement of Fact on the CBS radio network from May 14th, 1953.
Kathy and Elliot Lewis, On Stage. Kathy Lewis, Elliot Lewis, two of the most distinguished names in radio, appearing each week in their own theater, starring in a repertory of transcribed stories of their own and your choosing. Radio's foremost players in radio's foremost play. Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Lewis.
Good evening. May I present my wife, Kathy?
Good evening. And before we start tonight, thank you all very, very much for the letters and cards and telegrams wishing us well on our wedding anniversary. We do appreciate your thoughtfulness. We're very grateful.
Tonight we're going to please some of you and make others of you angry, because the story we're going to do was written for us by E. Jack Newman.
And whenever we've done one of Jack's radio plays, we find that you have a remarkable reaction. You're either completely charmed by the party and Eddie and Casey at the bat, or you take a violent dislike to his plays. Now we hope to get a new reaction as we present E. Jack Newman's new radio play, Statement of Fact.
Yeah.
Evergreen 3-1291?
Yes.
This is the long-distance operator, sir. Evanston calling. My party will speak with anyone at this number.
Who's calling?
Mr. John Bradford.
All right, operator.
Just a moment, please. Mr. Bradford, ready with your call to Evergreen 3-1291 in Jackson.
Hello, Chris.
Here's your party. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. Hello.
Hello, Chris. This is Bradford. I'm sorry to wake you up in the middle of the night.
She say you're calling from Evanston?
Yeah, that's right, Chris. The sheriff here picked up Ellen Dudley a half an hour ago. She was hiding in the restroom in an all-night bus station.
Ellen Dudley?
Yeah. A friend of mine with the State Highway Patrol was in on it and gave me a ring. Just a lucky accident. I found out about it at all. She's being held incommunicado, Chris.
Your friend on the Highway Patrol, does he have...
Just a patrolman, Chris. That's out.
What is it, dear? Is there something...
Hold on. John Bradford.
Oh, there's something wrong?
Chris.
Yeah.
We have to work fast on this.
I know.
Dear, can't whatever it is wait until morning? Doesn't he realize you need your rest?
Just keep quiet for a minute, will you, Ann?
Sorry, dear.
Has she sent for anyone?
No, I don't think so. Not yet. Well, what do you want to do, Chris?
Wait a minute. What time is it?
3:35.
Well, I can drive there by 4:15. What's the sheriff's name?
Walter Morrow.
Can you get to him?
I can try, Chris.
Get to him. And tell Sheriff Morrow that the district attorney will hold him personally responsible for the conduct of his offices in this situation. Remind him that the accused is the state's prisoner.
Chris, legally, he can hold her for 48 hours.
Let me worry about that part of it. You make certain he understands what I just told you.
I'll do my best.
Right. See you in a little while, John.
I think it's terrible that he should call you...
They picked up Ellen Randall Dudley out in Evanston. They'll make a spectacle of this thing, or it can be done right. Where's my blue shirt?
It's in the laundry, dear. I sent it out this morning. Aren't you going to shave?
No time.
Would you like some coffee?
Haven't time, Ann.
Chris, you can't just rush out of here without...
Ann, stop. Please. There are a million things on my mind.
I'm only trying to help you, dear.
I know, dear. I'm sorry.
Here.
Thanks.
Why do you always have to handle these things?
Huh?
When something has to be done right, you seem to be the only one they can count on. Maybe it's because you're the only one who'll get up in the middle of the night.
Cufflinks. Cufflinks.
There. When will you be home?
I don't know. I'll get a nap at the club this afternoon. Don't worry.
There was a time when you told me about these
things. I just haven't time now, dear. Where's my bill?
Who's Ellen Randall Dudley?
Don't you read the papers?
Yes.
That's her.
Very beautiful woman, isn't she?
So they say. Coat.
What's she done?
I thought you read the papers.
I just noticed a picture on the front page. I didn't
Goodbye.
Read about... I wish I had some idea why...
Read about it, dear. It's all over the papers, the whole story. All you have to do is read about it. You don't have to ask me.
I'll do that.
So long, Anne.
Chris?
What now?
We aren't very happy these days, are we, Chris?
I don't know what we are, Anne. Goodbye.
Bye. Why? Why?
Hey, boys, it's Christian.
Come on,
fellas. I'd hate to be in Mrs. Dudley's shoes when Christian gets through with her.
Oh, what? Outside. Hold it, Mr. Christian.
How about a statement, Mr. Christian?
No comment.
Is she crazy?
That's not for me to say.
We'd like your opinion, Mr. Christian.
I have never met Mrs. Dudley. Pardon me.
Will you present the indictment against her?
No.
Will you file the indictment, Mr. Christian?
An indictment can only be presented and filed by the grand jury. Take your hand off my arm.
Oh, sorry. Does the state have sufficient evidence against Mrs. Dudley to get a conviction?
That is a matter for the jury and the Superior Court to decide.
How about one more picture, Mr. Christian?
Oh, John.
Oh, hello, Chris.
How'd they get in on this?
Sheriff Morrow, I told him you were on the way, and he called the papers.
Publicity hound?
Yeah, afraid so, Chris. It's the only important arrest he's ever made here.
Yeah, and he could queer everything with these kind of shenanigans. How long has he been in office?
Oh, 10 years.
Where is he?
In there.
Where's Mrs. Dudley?
She's in there with him.
What?
I told you this was something for him here. Mrs. Morrow sent over a tray. The accused and Sheriff Morrow having a snack together, I'll have you know.
Mm. Come on. Where's she been these last 3 days?
I don't know.
Made any calls yet?
No, I'm sure of that.
Somebody's going to try and get to her.
Just a minute. Sheriff Morrow left orders he's not to be disturbed.
What's your name?
I'm Deputy P.J. Thaler.
Mr. Thaler, I want you to go and stand by that door over there.
Huh?
No one, absolutely no one, is to come through that door until I say so.
I take my orders from Sheriff Morrow.
Thaler, I want... Hey, I thought I told you I didn't want anyone around here.
You Sheriff Morrow?
Yes, who are you?
Dale Christian.
Oh. Mr. Bradford here explained you were on the way.
We can handle this situation all right, Mr. Christian.
Is Mrs. Dudley in there?
Yes.
Is she guarded?
No need to guard her.
Get in there, John. Don't take your eyes off.
Yeah, all right.
Now, look
no,
here.
No, you look here, Sheriff. You're going to do what I say.
Just a minute there, Bradford. He has no right to go into my office.
He has every right to go in there, and I'll show you why. Here, you see this? It's a warrant issued yesterday afternoon for the arrest of Ellen Randall Dudley. When you see that seal and that signature, your authority is automatically superseded.
No one comes in here and tells me how to run my job.
I'm telling you. You're trying to get your name and picture in every newspaper in the country at the expense of this case. You've already jeopardized the state's position. I'll have no more of it. This is no pressman's holiday. If you have any brains at all, you'll take Mr. Thaler here and go outside and get rid of those reporters as fast as you can.
I'll take action against you for this, Mr. Christian.
No.
See if you can get Bert Pelleton out of bed, Thaler.
This man has overstepped his bounds.
Ellen Randall Dudley?
Yes?
My name is Christian, Mrs. Dudley. I'm the deputy district attorney. All right, John.
What are you going to do?
Just take a few notes, Mrs. Dudley.
What kind of notes?
Well, Mr. Bradford's also from my office. He's here to take notes on what you say to me, Mrs. Dudley.
Oh.
I'm obligated to warn you that whatever you say right now may be used later in the court. You don't have to talk to me unless you want to. Do you understand that?
Yes.
A little later on, they'll take you into Jackson and you can get some sleep. I suppose you're tired.
Yes, I am, Mr. Christian.
Well, this won't take long. I'd just like to have your story in your own words.
Pardon me?
Yes?
I don't understand you, Mr. Christian. You just told me that anything I tell you may be used against me in court.
Yes.
Then I really shouldn't tell you anything.
Mrs. Dudley, listen to me. Listen carefully. Yesterday afternoon, I attended a coroner's inquest held in Jackson. It was an inquest into the death of your husband, Robert Ames Dudley.
Yes.
A coroner's jury there determined that Mr. Dudley came to his death as the result of wounds inflicted by you, his wife. A hatchet was presented as evidence. Mr. Thomas Unger of the police crime laboratory positively identified it as the murder weapon. He showed the coroner's jury that samples of the blood found on the hatchet matched with specimens of your husband's blood. Sergeant Victor Manning also testified and explained that several fingerprints on the murder weapon belonged to you. Two witnesses, your maid Ethel Lee Barth, and a neighbor, Mrs. Frank Thompson, gave testimony that further incriminate you. Enough evidence was presented for the coroner's jury to recommend that you be taken into custody and held for the action of the grand jury. Do you understand what I've just told you?
Yes, I think so.
In a few days, the grand jury will meet and charge you with murdering your husband. There is no doubt that they will make that indictment, Mrs. Dudley. From there, you will be arraigned and later on taken into a court and tried. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Fine. Now, a frank, honest statement on your part before all these things take place can save a great deal of pain on both sides. Such a statement from you right now may determine the disposition and the proper plea to be entered on your behalf.
What do you mean, Mr. Christian? Proper plea?
You murdered Roger Ames Dudley on the night of the 13th. Now, the sooner you admit that, the better off you'll be. You make a full confession here. Mr. Bradford will take it down. You'll sign it. You enter a plea of guilty. And I promise you I'll do all I can for you with the court. Is that okay?
Suppose I don't admit anything.
Then you can expect no clemency. That, of course, is entirely up to you, Mrs. Dudley, but I'm going to tell you that the death house in the state penitentiary has been filled with people who didn't listen to reason while they still had a chance. This is your chance, Mrs. Dudley. Right here and now. Well?
I don't know what to do.
I've just explained what is best for you to do. You're hooked, and you're going to have to face up to it one way or the other. If you don't take my advice, they'll hang you. I promise you, Mrs. Dudley, they'll hang you as certainly as you're sitting in that chair in front of me. But what do you have to say now?
You are listening to Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Tonight's play, Statement of Fact. Another radio first for CBS Radio's wonderful Friday night music show, There's Music in the Air. Tomorrow night, There's Music in the Air for the first time by Dmitri Tiomkin and Ned Washington, Academy Award-winning songwriters for High Noon. There's Music in the Air will present their song, Return to Paradise, from the new Gary Cooper, Roberta Haynes movie of the same name. That's on most of these same CBS radio stations.
Couldn't find the aspirin around here, Mr. Christian. The drugstore's not open yet, but I did find a couple of Emperin tablets.
Those will be fine.
Now, here you go, Mr. Christian.
Thank you.
How's she feeling?
She's all right.
Oh, Mr. Christian.
Yes?
I thought I'd better tell you. Sheriff Morrow ordered me to call Mr. Pelleton.
Oh?
Yeah, he ordered me to do it. Mr. Pelleton's on his way over here right now.
Thank you for the information.
Mr. Christian, I worked out of here for Sheriff Morrow ever since he's been in office. I think I ought to tell you I'd be a little careful about the way you handle it, Mr. Christian.
Thank you. I can handle Sheriff Morrow.
Oh, I'm sure you can, Mr. Christian. I never doubted that for one second. No, sir. I know you know your job. I know you're trying to get a job done here, and you don't want no hocus-pocus about it. I guess I can't blame you one bit. I'd do the same thing if I was in your shoes and wanted a conviction as fast as I could get it. I just want you to know, Mr. Christian, that I'm on your side.
I appreciate that.
When you're made district attorney and you're appointing special investigators, I hope you'll remember me, Mr. Christian. P.J. Thaler, Evanston Sheriff's Office.
I'll remember you, Mr. Thaler. Feeling any better?
I guess so. I'm sorry.
Of course. Here, these will help.
Oh,
Well, I hope you've decided to use your head about this, Mrs. Dudley.
I want to, Mr. Christian.
Sure you do. Suppose you start right from the beginning.
Yes. Do you have a cigarette?
Oh, sure. Here you go.
Thank you. You smoke my brand.
Really?
Thank you.
Sure. Okay now?
Yes.
You were married to him 8 years, is that correct?
Yes.
I understand you met in Europe?
Yes, in London during the war. I've read about you in the papers, Mr. Christian. They say you're going to be the new district attorney. You don't look much older than Roger. He was 36.
I'm 34. You and Mr. Dudley had been having trouble for some time?
Oh, yes. For years. I imagine you've had some experiences being in the position you are. You talk to many people in a situation like mine?
Quite a few, Mrs. Dudley. Last July, you had Mr. Dudley arrested when he came home drunk and threatened you?
Yes, but he got out of that very easily. They didn't do a thing to him. Roger was awfully good at talking himself out of things.
You didn't prefer charges against him?
No, it wouldn't have done any good. He would have gotten out of it anyway. He had a law degree, too, you know.
So I understand.
Roger never went into practice. He didn't have to. He didn't have to do anything. That was his trouble. Father left him quite a bit of money, and he simply didn't have to do anything at all.
Shall we get on with this, Mrs. Dudley? It's past 5 now.
5? Well, I've been up all night long. Makes 4 nights in a row I've gone without sleep.
As soon as we finish here, you can get some sleep.
I don't feel one bit sleepy. When I first came here, I was dreadfully tired. I thought I could sleep for a week. Now I'm not the least bit tired or sleepy. That's funny.
If you'll just start with the events that night.
What is today?
Friday.
I'd be playing bridge this afternoon. There's a dog show tomorrow evening I wanted to go to, but I won't be able to go anywhere now. Do you feel sorry for me, Mr. Christian?
I beg your pardon?
Do you feel sorry for me?
Well, it makes no difference how I feel, Mrs. Dudley. You're an accused prisoner. My job is to get a statement of fact from you. That's why I'm here.
Oh.
I've explained this once. I'm your friend here. In a courtroom, I'll represent the prosecution, and I'll do everything I can to see to it that you hang. Unless you make a complete confession now. Is that perfectly clear to you, Mrs. Dudley?
Yes. And if you have a record of always getting a conviction, that'll help when you run for office, won't it?
Mrs. Dudley, my professional career has nothing to do with us. If I weren't here talking to you, someone else from my office would be here. It's a job that has to be done. I happen to be the one who is doing it.
But wouldn't it be better for you if you had more of an audience than Mr. Bradford over there? Wouldn't it be much better if you had me in a courtroom with reporters and
photographers? Mrs. Dudley, do you want to talk to me now? Oh.
I don't mean to make you angry, Mr. Christian. If all you've told me is true about what happened at the coroner's inquest and what will happen when the grand jury meets, you can hang me right now.
I certainly can.
Yet you're here to get my story. You must be uncertain about something.
I told you I'm trying to help you, Mrs. Dudley, but I warn you I am not uncertain about anything where you are concerned. Make no mistake about that. I have a duty to the people of this state. That is to learn the facts of this case and present them before the court. I intend to do that with or without your cooperation. Well?
May I talk to you alone?
You understand why Mr. Bradford is here?
Yes, but I'd like to tell it to you alone. It can't possibly hurt anything to talk to you first, can it?
All right, John, wait outside. I'll send for you when I need you.
Right, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, Mrs. Dudley.
I killed Roger.
Tell me how it happened.
I was having some people over for dinner that night. I was busy in the kitchen with the maid fixing the dinner. When Roger came downstairs, I asked him to do a simple thing, just a little thing. I asked him to start a fire in the fireplace. It was pretty chilly out, and the fire always made that room look so warm and nice. Have you seen my house?
Yes, Mrs. Dudley. Go on, please.
I heard him down in the basement getting things ready for the fire. When I looked at the clock, it was past 7. The fire hadn't even been started in the fireplace. Our guests were arriving at 7:30. I asked Roger to come up and make some martinis and let the fire go for a moment. He called me a name.
Why?
I never knew why he did things like that. I went downstairs to ask him why he was so angry. He called me another name. It wasn't just the name or him being angry. It was all the things he'd done to me before, the arguing and fighting and the insults. When he started up the stairs, I picked up the hatchet and I hit him with it. He fell down.
Then what did you do?
I ran upstairs and put on my coat and left the house.
Where have you been these last 3 days?
Right here in Evanston. I had a room at the Evanston Hotel until last night. Then I thought I'd try to get away, go to another city, Chicago or New York. Found out who I was at the bus station.
Did you ever think about killing your husband before this?
Oh, yes.
Did you know you were going to kill him when you went down to the basement?
Yes.
Did he go out with other women?
Not that I know of.
Did he ever beat you?
Oh, no.
He gave you a nice home, all you needed.
But he took my life away from me, Mr. Christian.
What?
He took my life away from me. He stole my life.
I don't understand that, Mrs. Dudley.
When I was going down the stairs that night and saw him standing there, I suddenly realized all he had taken from me. Everything that was young and fresh and wanting. And I despised him for it. So I killed him.
But why did you have to kill him? You could have divorced him, left him.
Don't you see what he had taken from me, Mr. Christian? There was nothing left for him to steal from me, or nothing left for me to give another man. Are you married?
Yes. Yeah.
Then you know what a man can take from a woman. Mr. Christian, am I someone you'd want to be married to if this terrible thing hadn't happened? Am I someone you'd be proud to have for a wife?
You might be.
That's all a woman needs, is to be wanted. Am I old and ugly and unattractive? Am I shallow or flighty? Look at me, Mr. Christian.
I am.
No, stand up, please. Look at me. Close.
Yeah.
Would you want to be loved by me?
You're very lovely, Mrs. Dudley.
Would you?
Yes.
Well, I was nothing to Roger Dudley, nothing. And my love was nothing to him. I was a fixture, a decoration, an animal. And he took all of it, my love and my life, and then he stood at the bottom of the stairway and called me a name.
Mrs. Dudley. Mrs. Dudley, listen to me. Listen to me. No one saw this happen. The maid was upstairs in the kitchen. Mrs. Thompson only heard it from next door. Listen to me. You can claim that you did it in self-defense.
What?
He came at you and you picked up the hatchet and you hit him with it to protect yourself. You tell it that way when Mr. Bradford comes back in here. There are a dozen good men in this state who'd be glad to represent you in court with a story like that. I'll be opposite them. You can get off. He made you kill him because it was either him or you, and you ran afterwards because you were frightened. In the end, you'll be charged with second-degree murder, and at the most, you'll get a suspended sentence. Don't you understand what I'm telling you? You can be free.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Christian.
All right, let's have Mr. Bradford in here now, please.
Right.
Wait a minute.
Hold it.
I can never be free.
You know what you're saying?
You haven't understood anything I've said. He took my life away from me a long time ago. Can't you see, Mr. Christian, I don't have any life to live now.
Mrs. Dudley, you have everything to live for. Look, you're young and beautiful, and you want and need all of the things that life can give you.
Too late, Mr. Christian.
You'll get at least a life sentence. Listen.
few minutes ago, you were telling me about your duty to the people of this state, Mr. Christian. Tell me about it now.
Yeah.
All right.
I wanted to talk to you alone like this to make sure I was right. You're no better than he was, Mr. Christian. You'd take a woman and do the same thing to her that he did to me. Until you kissed me just then, I wasn't a person to you. I was an animal, a trapped animal. And if I let you help me escape from this trap, I'd just be escaping into a smaller one. A worse one. With you. You're another Roger Dudley.
Okay, Chris? Chris?
Are you ready to make your statement of fact, Mrs. Dudley?
Yes.
All right, John, take it down. From the beginning, Mrs. Dudley, just as you told it to me.
Statement of Fact, starring Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. In a moment, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis will tell you about next week's play. This Saturday morning, it's a most unusual challenge for Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. The famous adventurer of darkest Africa meets a juvenile delinquent and encounters problems of a very different sort in Tarzan and the Hot Rod Kid. You'll also want to hear the latest episode of Gangbusters, CBS Radio's exciting true crime cases that names names, places, and dates in thrilling accounts of police action against the lawless. Remember, this Saturday night on most of these same CBS radio stations, Tarzan and Gangbusters. And now once again, Kathy and Elliot Lewis.
And that was another of V. Jack Newman's searching studies of ourselves, this time set melodramatically.
He's an excellent writer.
Some friends new to On Stage joined us tonight. Joan Danton, who was the telephone operator, Jack Crucian, who was Special Deputy Thaler, and Tyler McVeigh, publicity-happy Sheriff Morrow.
While Joseph Kearns played my assistant, John Bradford.
Truda Marson rejoined us to play your wife, and Byron Kane was the reporter. We thank them all.
Since this is spring, and through the window we can see the sun, and the green grass, and the new flowers, and the days that have gone by, we thought it a good time to present a story that suits the season.
And so next week we're going to do a dramatization of a warm and charming book, almost forgotten now, that perfectly states the season for us. It was written by the late Leonard Marrick, and it's called Conrad in Quest of His Youth. You'll like it.
Until next week, thank you for listening. And good night.
Good night.
Music for tonight's story was composed and conducted by Fred Steiner. The Kathy and Elliot theme is by Ray Noble, and the program is transcribed and directed by Mr. Lewis. George Walsh speaking. America's 45 million radio families listen most to the CBS Radio Network.
On Stage, on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from May 14th, 1953 on CBS. Kathy and Elliot Lewis, radio darlings, radio royalty, under many names during their time on the air. The pair not only acting in a countless amount of broadcasts, but Elliot Lewis carried on the radio tradition well after the golden age of radio, notably with the Sears Radio Theater in the late 70s and early 80s. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Suspense with the story Two Platinum Capsules. This episode first heard on CBS on January 10th, 1956.
The story you are about to hear is based on fact. It happened. It involved the lives of six people. That sound is being made by a Geiger counter. a device for detecting radioactivity. It plays an important part in the following events. The place, a city in Northern California. Population, 41,300. For Johnny Murphy, age 11, the day started like any other day. The time, 8:36 a.m.
Applecore!
Baltimore!
Who is your friend?
The mailman.
Here goes...
Hey! Here, you boy! You stop that!
You weren't even close.
I could have hit him if I wanted to.
Johnny! Johnny Murphy!
Yeah, Mom!
Come here.
I'll be right back, please. What do you want?
Come up here. I saw you throw that apple core at the mailman.
I didn't hit him, Mom. I didn't even try.
Don't ever let me catch you doing a thing like that again. Now, come inside. Your father's home.
He is? When did he get back?
Just a minute ago.
Hi, boy.
Did you find some uranium pots?
No, not this time.
We didn't expect you home until tonight, George.
Well, I woke up with a lousy cold yesterday. And on top of that, the water can sprung a leak. Didn't even have enough to make coffee before I left camp last night.
Oh, there's some on the stove.
Hey, Pop. Let me listen to the Geiger counter.
Not now, Johnny. Your father's tired from driving all night.
Please, Pop, just for a second.
Sure. Okay. Now.
Oh, gee. Is that how it sounds when it's near uranium?
No, it clicks a lot faster. So they tell me.
I'll fix your breakfast, George.
Scramble them, huh, May?
Hey, Johnny, come on!
Hey, Pete's waiting for me, Pop.
Okay, boy, you run along.
Johnny, you'll be home for lunch.
Okay, Mom. Where are we going?
I don't know. Where you want to go?
I don't know.
Hey, how about to my house?
Nah, nothing to do over there.
Well, what do you want to do?
I don't know. Something. Hey, I listened to my pop's Geiger counter.
Yeah? What'd you hear? Uranium?
Aw, come on.
Where are we going?
I don't know.
Why don't we go down to that new dump?
Where?
The new dump the city opened. They're filling in that old gravel pit over near Afton High.
What do we do down there?
I don't know. Look around. See if we can find something, maybe.
Okay. But I gotta be home for lunch.
At 8:50, George Murphy, a part-time uranium prospector, sat down to eat his breakfast. 5 miles away, Miss Helen Webster, a registered nurse employed at the Middle Branch Hospital, entered the staff cafeteria. A few moments later, the administrator, Dr. Carl Hutter, stopped at her table.
Well, how did you like waking up in 222 yesterday, Miss Webster?
Fine, Doctor.
Burton didn't give you any trouble, did she?
Why, no.
Get along with her all right?
Yes, I think so.
She probably hates your guts.
Oh, but why?
Well, she's leaving next week. We've asked her to retire. She knows you're taking her place.
Oh, I see.
Did she explain everything to you carefully?
Very carefully, Doctor.
Now, we want you to take charge as soon as she's gone. Is that all right with you?
Yes, sir. It's very interesting work.
It could be dangerous. But if you're careful, there's no risk involved. Did Burton have you working with the real thing or the dummy?
Well, the dummies at first, and then she opened the safe. Those capsules certainly don't look dangerous.
They're killers, Miss Webster. Don't ever forget it.
Every large hospital has a room 222. Painted in bold letters across the lead-lined door are the words, Danger. Radioactive. When not occupied, the room is padlocked. At 9:14, Miss Elsie Burton, registered nurse, inserted a key in the padlock and entered the room. She opened the heavy safe and, using a pair of forceps, lifted a small metal box from it. She quickly placed the box on a table. Then, stepping behind a lead shield designed to protect her body from the contents of the box, she opened it. Inside the box were several platinum capsules. And each capsule was filled with radium. It was 9:27 when she picked up the phone to report two of the platinum capsules missing. 9:28. George Murphy had finished his second cup of coffee, glanced through the morning paper, and was watching his wife at the kitchen sink.
More coffee, George?
No, thanks.
You look awfully tired.
I am.
We got a notice from the bank today. The payment's overdue again on that...
I know, May.
On that Geiger counter you had to buy. $160. When I think what I could have done with that
all
money...
All right, all right.
George, we can get along on your salary. We don't need $1 million. We can get along just fine on what you make at the gas station. If you'd only work instead of taking 3 days a week away, traipsing off goodness knows where.
Let's talk about it some other time, huh? I'm going in and lie down.
You close the bedroom door. I want the radio on while I do the ironing.
The two boys, Johnny Murphy and Peter Cowan, were approaching the city dump.
Hey, Peter, wait up. Come on, we're almost there.
Look, see it?
Huh? Doesn't look like nothing but a big hole in the ground.
That's where they took all the gravel from. They're dumping all kinds of stuff in that old pit now.
Hey, who's that?
Where?
Over by the shack.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe he's a watchman.
You crazy? What did they have a watchman at a dump for? Who'd steal junk?
Morning, boys.
You gonna answer him?
Are you the watchman?
That's right. You boys out exploring?
Well, kinda. If it's all right.
Oh, it's all right, providing you look out for the trucks.
Yes, sir. We'll be careful.
By 10:15, Dr. Hutter with Miss Burton and Miss Webster had made a preliminary search for the missing radio. It was not in room 222. A further check revealed that only one patient in the hospital was receiving radium therapy. According to the day chart, the radium used on the patient the day before had been returned to the safe. Nevertheless, the patient was examined, and the immediate area surrounding her bed carefully searched. The radium was not found. At 10:35, Dr. Hutter and the two nurses re-entered room 222.
I don't understand how it could have happened, Doctor. Could someone have taken it during the night?
No, even if they had a key to fit the padlock. Miss Burton is the only person in the hospital who has the combination to the safe.
You'll have all this responsibility next week, Miss Webster.
Burton, what time did you show the capsules to Miss Webster yesterday?
Just before lunch, Doctor.
Did you count the capsules before returning them to the safe?
Well, they weren't away from this table. I didn't think it was necessary to count them.
Well, we've done all we can. I'll notify the insurance company. Let them send a radium hound up from San Francisco.
A radium hound?
Yes, a man who specializes in finding lost radium by using a scintillator or a Geiger counter. He'll go through the hospital carefully and the counter will locate the radium.
Doctor, before you go, may I speak to you alone?
Certainly.
I'll be in the hall, Doctor. Doctor, you know I've never been one for carrying tales, but I refuse to take the responsibility for losing those capsules.
No one is blaming you, Burton. Accidents happen.
This was no accident.
Go on.
Doctor, I just happen to know that Miss Webster is engaged to a young doctor.
I don't see that that has any bearing on the lost radio.
Now, let me finish. This doctor is setting up his own office, and I'm sure he'd be mighty grateful for a gift of 200 milligrams of radium.
Burton, you've been around here too long. You've soured.
Doctor, I just remembered something.
Yes, Miss Webster?
Well, the other night, Leonard, Dr. Perry, told me that one of his patients goes away every weekend to hunt uranium. Wouldn't he own a Geiger counter?
He might. Yes, see if you can reach him.
Yes, sir.
We'll take this building apart if we have to. Oh, Miss Webster.
Yes, sir?
Notify all hospital personnel of the loss immediately. If someone's picked up those capsules without realizing what they are, they're in trouble.
May Murphy had just tuned in the 11 a.m. news broadcast when the phone rang. Recognizing the urgency in Miss Webster's voice, she promised to wake her husband immediately.
George? George, you've got to wake up. George. George, they want you down at the hospital.
What's the matter, Johnny? Something happened to Johnny?
No, not Johnny. They've lost some radium at Middle Branch Hospital. The nurse that called thought you might be able to find it.
Hand me a cigarette, will you?
Okay.
You got any hot coffee out there?
I'll heat it. Here.
Thanks.
Do you think you could find it, George?
I don't know. Maybe, if it's still in the hospital.
What does radium look like? You ever see any of it?
I wouldn't know radium if I tripped over it.
Atomic number 88. Atomic weight 226.05. Radium is an intensely radioactive element emitting strong gamma rays. It is used principally in the treatment of cancer to destroy malignant tissue. Unfortunately, the gamma rays cannot tell the difference between healthy and unhealthy tissue, making it extremely dangerous to handle. Unless caught in time, there is no cure for radium poisoning. Only a slow, lingering death.
Hey, mister! You know what time it is?
The time? Well, let's see now. It's 11:30.
You see? I told you it wasn't more than that.
Hey, you boys are too young to be worrying about time.
He's always worried about something.
I gotta be home for lunch.
Well, did you find anything valuable down in the dump?
Nah, nothing there I wanted.
I don't know if what I found is valuable or not.
Well, let's see it. Can't judge what it's worth if you don't let me take a look at it.
I got them in my pocket.
Them?
Yeah. Two little pieces of metal. See?
Oh, yeah. Mighty nice. Looks like they might have been used for counterweights of some sort. Excuse me, boys. Gotta tell that fella where to unload.
We'll see you, mister.
You be careful crossing the street, you boys. Don't want to get hurt.
It was 12:30 when George Murphy arrived at the hospital. He was quickly briefed by Dr. Hutter and the search started. Slowly, carefully, they walked through the sterile corridors, listening for any change in the normal count of the Geiger count.
I understand you do quite a bit of uranium prospecting, Mr. Murphy.
Yeah, I guess I do. I usually take off from work at the gas station on Thursdays and come back Sundays.
Well, you ever find any?
Not yet. I'm still hoping.
So am I. Let me find this radium, I mean.
Is that valuable?
It's that deadly. There's always a chance someone has picked it up without realizing what it is. Something?
The background count was a little high, but it's gone down.
Oh.
Say, just what do those capsules look like, Doctor?
Oh, they're about 2 inches long, metal, approximately as big around as a thick lead pencil. Well, it doesn't look like it's up here. Come on, I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
Hey, Doctor, wait a minute.
Hmm?
I'm picking up some response on this thing.
Well, that's from 222.
What?
We keep our regular supply of radium in 222, just ahead.
Oh. Well, I'm glad to know this thing works. Sure like to see it act up like that out in the desert.
Time, 1:40. After having a cup of coffee, the men continued their search. Drain pipes were examined. Trash and waste chutes leading to the incinerator. The incinerator itself and finally the ground surrounding the entire hospital were checked. At 4:15, as far as they were able to determine, they agreed the radium was not in or near the hospital. Dr. Hutter then contacted the trucking service that removed the non-combustible rubbish. The driver reported he had taken a load to the new city dump yard the previous afternoon. He was also sure the watchman at the yard would remember where he had unloaded. The time, 4:59.
There's the watchman's shack.
Doesn't look like anybody's here.
Probably gone for the day.
Well, you want to look around? Might get lucky.
Yep, you better.
Funny.
What's that?
Oh, when I'm shaving in the morning, I can usually see myself later in the day. At the gas station working, you know what I mean?
I think so.
I sure didn't see myself down here looking for a needle in a haystack. Well, I can't get anything on the Geiger, Doctor. The counter hasn't registered any change at all. You need a scintillator for this kind of job.
Well, you might as well start back. I hate saying this, but I'm beginning to think Burton might be right.
Burton?
She's the nurse in charge of 222. She believes the radium was stolen.
Could be. I'd sure give $10 to know where it is.
I'd give a lot more just to know those capsules aren't poisoning someone.
Howdy. Help you fellas?
Oh, are you the watchman?
That's right.
We were looking for you about an hour ago.
I quit at 5, went to eat. Oh, I live out here. What do you want to see me about?
Do you remember a consolidated truck here yesterday afternoon?
Yes, I do. I had him dump out in Area 4.
Where's that?
Right where you fellas were standing when I first spotted you.
Oh. Well, thanks.
Hey, wait a minute. You still ain't said what you wanted to see me about.
Do you know what radium looks like?
No, can't say I do.
A couple of capsules containing radium were lost from the hospital. We thought they might have been carried out here.
Well, how would I know them if I did see them?
They're about 2 inches long, little capsules of metal.
Mm-hmm.
Where to now?
Would you mind dropping me off at the hospital?
Okay.
Hey, here! Hey, say, hold on a minute.
Yes?
Two boys down here this morning. Should be something like that.
Two boys?
Yes, yeah, sir. I remember what they found. Looked like little counterweights.
Well, do you know the boys, either one of them?
No, never saw them before in my life.
Did they mention their names? Can you describe them?
No names, but I reckon I could give you an idea of what they look like.
Get in.
What for?
We're taking you down to the police station. We've got to find those boys fast.
By 7:30, the two radio stations in the city were broadcasting a description of the boys every half hour. An all-points bulletin had been relayed to the police substations and all patrol cars. The morning newspaper was setting up the story on the front page. There was nothing to do now but wait.
Hey, Mom.
Yes, Johnny?
Take a look at my leg, huh?
Your leg? What's the matter with it?
I don't know. It sort of burns.
You probably skinned it. Let's see. Well, there's nothing there. Just a little red is all.
Feels like it's burning.
There's your father. Now, you go get ready for bed.
Okay.
Hi, boy.
Hi, Pa.
George, I've kept your dinner warm. It's in the oven.
I didn't get a chance to call you.
I know. I heard all about it on the news. That poor kid. Now, you sit down.
What'd you fix?
Lamb chop. And I heated up some of those frozen biscuits. Is that boy going to die from the radium?
I don't know. Dr. Hutter said something about the rays burning deeper and deeper as time went on. Oh. Something to do with the square root, and I don't know. Hand me the butter, will you?
The description they gave on the radio, that boy must be about Johnny's age.
Yeah.
Johnny, I told you to get ready for bed.
Oh, golly, Mom, I haven't hardly seen Pop in 3 days.
That's right. Well, boy, what have you been doing?
What? Nothing. Just taking it easy.
Taking it easy. You just wait, boy. You just wait a few years.
Hey, can I put your Geiger counter away for you?
Look, how many times do I have to tell you that it isn't a toy? It costs a lot of money.
That's the truth.
Can I listen to it, Pop, please?
Johnny, leave your father alone. He's dead tired. Go on, get ready for bed.
Oh, Mom.
Mind your mother, boy.
Yes, sir.
All right. Come back here.
Yes, sir?
Come here. Now, wait a minute.
What's wrong with it?
Oh, the switch is stuck. Okay, now.
Pop!
What the devil?
Pop, is it broken?
Wait a minute. Where'd you go today, boy?
What?
You went to the city dump, didn't you?
George, no! Pop, what are you looking at?
Answer me, Johnny. You went to the city dump, didn't you?
Pop, what's wrong with you?
Give me the radium, Johnny.
I didn't do nothing wrong.
Give me the radium!
Why did you take to the city dump, Johnny? Nothing. Only these little fools. Good luck charms. That's all. Just these little good luck charms.
The search was over. Fortunately, because of Johnny's normal activity, the radium capsules had bounced around in his pocket. The burns covered a wide area, but the rays had not penetrated as deeply as they could have done. The Murphys were told to consider themselves lucky. If the boy had carried the capsules another few hours, it would have been impossible to save him. On being informed of the boy's condition, Miss Burton, the nurse in charge of room 222, admitted to throwing the two capsules in with the non-combustible rubbish, hoping her replacement would receive the blame. She was immediately discharged and barred from any further practice in the nursing profession.
Suspense on Tuned To Yesterday, a CBS episode from January 10th, 1956. And that brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned To Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.